Picture this. You are seeing a 32-year-old woman in the outpatient OBGYN clinic as part of your third-year rotation. Your patient is 6 weeks postpartum, who experienced an uncomplicated pregnancy and vaginal delivery. She says to you, "My newborn is doing great, but I'm a little concerned about something I've been experiencing. I've been having some bleeding whenever I pass stool. It's pretty painful when I have a bowel movement, and I think I feel something down there when I wipe." On examination, she has a rubbery lump protruding from the anal canal. There is perianal excoriation. What additional questions would you ask her to help diagnose her condition? What would you recommend as management for this condition? And welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Yoon Weisholtz, here to bring the gastrointestinal bricks to your ears. After today's episode, you'll be able to 1. Describe the pathophysiology, clinical features, diagnosis, and treatment of hemorrhoids. 2. Describe similar components for anal fissures, abscesses, and fistulas. And 3. Describe such features also for proctitis and anal pruritus. What are inflammatory and vascular anal rectal disorders? Perianal disease is essentially a disease of tissue surrounding the anus. It comprises a cluster of diseases that greatly affect quality of life. In fact, did you know that anal rectal disorders have been described in ancient medical texts as far back as 1500 BCE in Mesopotamia? Yeah, it's true. Common symptoms include anal pain, bleeding, discharge, and pruritus, or itching. Inflammatory and vascular anal rectal disorders discussed here include hemorrhoids, anal fissures, anal abscesses, perianal fistulas, proctitis, and anal itching. Now, before we dive in, we need to understand why these disorders are so important. Think of the gastrointestinal system as a long, convoluted tube. You start at one end with the mouth, where food and beverages enter. These get processed through the system, and waste is eliminated at the other end. It's like a garden hose, but if the end of the tube has problems, it can affect the entire tube. Part 1. What are hemorrhoids? The anus and rectum have hemorrhoid venous cushions, which is just a fancy way of saying a rich ring of vasculature. These are arterial venous connections that drain into the superior and inferior hemorrhoidal veins. The structure is normal, but it's located in a vulnerable position, meaning it can become easily engorged and irritated. Sometimes it might even bleed. And believe it or not, hemorrhoids are very common, so it's nothing to be embarrassed about. In fact, an estimated 75% of people will experience hemorrhoids in their lifetime, but less than 5% will see the doctor when they are symptomatic. Hemorrhoids are caused by engorgement and irritation of the perianal vasculature. This is usually due to extra pressure on the vessels. Common factors that exert pressure on the vessels include chronic constipation and straining, obesity, pregnancy, and prolonged sitting. Hemorrhoids are also associated with aging, diarrhea, and anticoagulation or antiplatelet therapy, and these conditions are considered risk factors for hemorrhoids. As an extension, risk factors for constipation are also risk factors for hemorrhoids. These include low dietary fiber and low fluid intake. I'm giving you a hint here about what treatments might work for hemorrhoids, so keep that in mind when I discuss that in a few minutes. And did you know that there are actually two types of hemorrhoids, external and internal? The distinction lies in the location with respect to the pectinate line, sometimes called the dentate line. Internal hemorrhoids occur above the pectinate line, whereas external hemorrhoids occur below it. Okay, let's pause here to review this important concept. Where are internal and external hemorrhoids located with respect to the pectinate line? Internal hemorrhoids occur above the pectinate line, and external hemorrhoids occur below it. Common symptoms for both types may include bothersome perianal itching or burning, sensation of incomplete bowel emptying, also called tenesmus, mucosal discharge, and bright red blood per rectum. Both internal and external hemorrhoids can prolapse through the anal sphincter. This leaves them vulnerable to strangulation with sphincter contraction. Strangulation leads to ulceration and bleeding. Ouch! As you can imagine, these are very uncomfortable to have, and their presence can affect the quality of life. One notable difference between internal and external hemorrhoids in their presentation is the degree of pain they cause. The mucosa above the pectinate line is served by visceral pelvic splanchnic afferents that do not detect pain, so internal hemorrhoids are usually painless. The external mucosa below the pectinate line is served by somatic afferents that do detect pain, so external hemorrhoids are usually painful. And now, to see if you are paying attention, what is the clinical significance of the pectinate line? The different innervations above and below the pectinate line result in painless internal hemorrhoids and painful external hemorrhoids. An additional difference in their presentation is thrombosis. External hemorrhoids more frequently thrombose, which means that a clot develops within the dilated vessel, further increasing pressure in the area. When external hemorrhoids become thrombosed, they turn purple and swell, causing a very painful mass or lump on the anus. Hemorrhoids are diagnosed based on clinical presentation and physical exam. Anoscopy is usually used for physical examination. It involves inserting a short anoscope or proctoscope with a light into the rectum to look for hemorrhoids. Remember how I spoke about fiber and constipation and gave you a hint about their role in hemorrhoid treatment? This is where they become important. Hemorrhoid treatment begins with non-invasive measures. Non-invasive treatments for hemorrhoids are used early to minimize progression over time and to promote natural self-regression. The goal of non-invasive treatment is twofold: decrease anal pressure and treat symptoms. To decrease anal pressure, advise a high-fiber diet and increased water intake. Other over-the-counter medications include stool softeners. To alleviate the symptoms, sitz baths are usually recommended to help reduce inflammation. For non-prolapsed hemorrhoids of both types, a more invasive option is rubber band ligation, which works by encircling the base of the hemorrhoid to prevent it from filling with more blood. The lack of circulation results in the death of the tissue, which ulcerates and eventually scars. In addition, internal hemorrhoids can be treated with heat coagulation, which destroys the hemorrhoid and leads to scar formation. Surgical excision or resection is an option for those patients who cannot achieve sufficient relief with less invasive options. Commonly, the long and painful recovery period far outlasts normal healing, which is an additional reason to encourage non-invasive treatments when possible. Part 2. What are anal fissures? Besides hemorrhoids, another type of anal rectal disorder are fissures. An anal fissure is a slit-like tear within the anal mucosa on the posterior midline below the pectinate line. Why do fissures occur in this particular location? The answer is limited perfusion. Blood perfusion is weakest in this area, making it most susceptible to tearing on straining. Unfortunately, this poor perfusion sometimes exacerbates the problem. Accompanying spasms of the internal sphincter pull on the tear, increasing pressure as well as reducing blood flow to the area. These combined effects lead to poor healing. Risk factors for anal fissures include chronic constipation, hard stools, anal intercourse, pregnancy, autoimmune inflammation, and chronic diarrhea. How do patients with anal fissures typically present? Anal fissures typically present with severe pain with defecation. Patients will say that it feels like they are passing glass. This pain is due to somatic innervation below the pectinate line. Sometimes it can even persist after defecation. At this point, it is often described more as bothersome itching or burning. Blood can be present as well, typically with wiping. I'm going to stop here for a quick quiz question on what we just learned. Are anal fissures painful or painless? Because anal fissures occur below the pectinate line, they are painful. The diagnosis of anal fissures is usually done based on doing a thorough history. Physical examination can sometimes confirm the presence of visible cracks around the skin of the anus, although they are often small and difficult to visualize. Notably, laterally located fissures may indicate that another anal rectal disorder is also present, such as inflammatory bowel disease, or IBD. how would you treat anal fissures? Standard non-invasive methods include sitz baths to reduce inflammation, increased fiber and water intake to soften stool, and regular exercise to regulate frequency of bowel movements. Medical measures include stool softeners and topical vasodilators like nifedipine or nitroglycerin, as well as a topical lidocaine for pain control. If these supportive measures fail to provide improvement after 8 weeks, the most effective and preferred treatment of anal fissure is injection of botulinum toxin. Botox injections help relax the spasms of the internal sphincter, thus giving the tear a chance to heal. This new knowledge may cause you to giggle, because now you know that Botox is not just for your face. Unfortunately, the recurrence of anal fissures is common. And finally, lateral internal sphincterotomy is the definitive surgical option. Part 3. What are anal abscesses? An anal abscess is a pus-filled cavity found near the anus or rectum. The majority of abscesses develop because of acute infection of the internal anal glands. Did you know we even had these? Bacteria, fecal material, or foreign matter can clog the gland, making it susceptible to overlying infection. As fluid accumulates in the gland, pressure increases, creating a fluid-filled pocket. The offending microbes for perianal abscesses can be anaerobic, aerobic, or facultative, or more commonly, a combination. The most common anaerobic bacteria include B. fragilis, Peptostreptococcus species, and Clostridium species, whereas the most common aerobic or facultative species include Staphylococcus aureus, Streptococcus, and E. coli. Anal abscesses are classified based on their location. Possible locations include perianal, meaning it's right below the anus, ischioanal, which is a fat-filled wedge-shaped space located lateral to the anal canal and inferior to the pelvic diaphragm, intersphincteric, the tract in the space between the internal and external sphincters, and supralevator, the space which lies between the pelvic floor and the levator ani muscles. So again, the possible locations are perianal, ischioanal, intersphincteric, and supralevator. If these abscesses form circumferentially around the anus or rectum, they are referred to as a horseshoe abscess, although this type of horseshoe is certainly not the lucky kind. Note that the perianal area is closest to the superficial edge of the skin, making it the most susceptible to outside pathogens. Conversely, the supralevator location is deeper and farther away from invading pathogens. This explains why perianal abscesses occur most commonly, whereas supralevator abscesses are the least common. How do patients with perianal abscesses present? Perianal abscesses present with anal rectal pain, swelling, tenderness, and fever. Occasionally, rectal bleeding or urinary symptoms might occur. They often present with fistula as well. Diagnosis is made clinically on physical exploration. Externally visible abscesses are found on inspection. However, abscesses may also be hidden inside the rectum. MRI is also useful in complicated infections, such as in the setting of IBD, because they provide a more concise image to better ascertain characteristics of the root cause. This leads me to discuss an important point. Perianal diseases are significantly more common in patients with IBD as compared with the general population. Those with Crohn's disease are at a much higher risk of perianal complications than those with ulcerative colitis. Goodness, anal abscesses are nothing but bad news. So how do we treat it? The treatment of anal abscess is surgical drainage and antibiotics. Even with treatment, there is a 50% risk of complication with fistula formation. Recurrence is also a possibility. Note that antibiotics as a solo treatment is not helpful because they cannot penetrate the abscess. Therefore, antibiotics are usually given after incision and drainage. Let's stop here for a quick review. What is the most common location for an anal abscess? The most common location for an anal abscess is the perianal area. Part 4. What are anal fistulas? A fistula describes an abnormal connection between two body parts. Sometimes fistulas can be caused by extensions of abscesses. In other cases, fistulas are non-infectious in nature. Like abscesses, fistulas are categorized based on their location. But with fistulas, categorization is based on the location with respect to the anal sphincter. Let's review the common locations of fistulas. Okay, so they can be intersphincteric, meaning the fistula tract begins in the space between the internal and external sphincter muscles and opens very close to the anal opening. They can also be transsphincteric, where fistulas track from the internal opening at the dentate line via the internal and external anal sphincters into the ischiorectal fossa and then terminates in the perineum. Or they can be suprasphincteric, where fistulas pass from the internal opening at the dentate line to the intersphincteric space, tracking superiorly to above the pubal rectalis, and curves downward to the perineum. Finally, fistulas that are extrasphincteric run from the perianal skin via the ischiorectal fossa, tracking upward through the levator ani muscles to the rectal wall, completely outside the sphincter mechanism, with or without a connection to the dentate line. Just remember that intersphincteric fistulas are the most common, whereas extrasphincteric is the least common because of weakness and integrity at the sphincter. Patients who have perianal fistulas usually present with anal rectal pain, anal drainage, and skin irritation, and occasionally rectal bleeding. Like other anal pathologies, anal fistulas are diagnosed clinically. Physical exam demonstrates a visible external opening that drains pus, blood, or stool. Alternatively, pelvic MRI can also be used for mapping the tract trajectory. Now let's talk about treating anal fistulas. Surgery is typically the only definitive treatment option for fistula. Fistulotomy has a success rate of 95%, but it often comes with the unfortunate complication of fecal incontinence. An endoanal advancement flap is another surgical option. In this procedure, a healthy flap of tissue essentially covers the existing fistula. However, this surgical strategy is usually less effective than fistulotomy because it merely covers up the problem area. The new covering can easily be broken by refistulization in the potential space. Another option for management is placement of a seton or loop of flexible plastic that keeps the tract open and allows for ongoing drainage to avoid further infectious complications. This is commonly done in the setting of Crohn's disease. Now, before we move on, let's do a quick pop quiz. What is the most common location for an anal fistula? The most common location for an anal fistula is intersphincteric. Part 5. What is proctitis? Okay, we're now going to move away from fistulas, abscesses, and fissures. Are you itching to find out what is next? Let's discuss proctitis. Proctitis is inflammation of the lining of the rectum. The inflammation can be caused by IBD, like ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, bacterial infections, such as by Salmonella or C. difficile, sexually transmitted diseases, or perirectal radiation. Patients with proctitis present with painful defecation, urgency, tenesmus, lower abdominal cramping, and painless bleeding. Diagnosis of proctitis is made with a proctoscope or sigmoscope, stool tests, blood tests, and occasionally colonoscopy. Inspection can show inflammation, whereas stool tests can indicate etiology. Anal swab cultures and viral cultures of vesicular fluid can diagnose an underlying sexually transmitted infection. Stool antigen testing is usually to check for underlying C. diff, and the venereal disease research laboratory test confirms syphilis. Leukocytosis on complete blood count further supports infectious etiology. In the case of autoimmune etiologies, sometimes a biopsy is needed via colonoscopy. Treatment of proctitis is guided by etiology. Infectious agents are treated with antibiotics like metronidazole and vancomycin. Autoimmune etiologies are typically treated with topical mesalamine, which can be used long-term. Topical steroids or oral mesalamine can be administered if infection does not resolve with first-line therapy. Part 6. What is anal pruritus? The majority of perianal itching or anal pruritus is idiopathic, meaning its cause is unknown. Sometimes idiopathic anal itching is from abrasive wiping or fecal contaminants. Known causes of perianal itching include parasites and fungus. Among the parasites, E. Ramicularis, referred to as pinworm, is most common in the United States. Among the fungi, Candida and Tinea are the most common culprits. The main risk factor for parasitic and fungal resources of anal itching is poor hygiene. Fecal-oral transmission, preventable with frequent hand washing, transmits pinworms from one person to another. So it is common among young children. Infrequent bathing or body habitus issues preventing proper cleaning allow for fungal overgrowth. Pinworms is commonly diagnosed by the infamous yet useful tape test. A piece of tape is placed over the anus at night. In the morning, the eggs can be visualized on the tape. This is because pinworms are most active at night, coming out to lay its eggs. And how do we treat this itchy problem? Initial management of anal pruritus is often conservative, including improving anal hygiene, avoiding moisture, removing offending agents, making dietary modifications, and protecting the anal skin with zinc oxide ointments. The treatment for pinworm is perantil palmoate or benzimidazole. And here's a fun way to remember this point. To remember what drug is used to treat pinworm, think benzimidazole treat bendy worms. And that's all I have today for inflammatory and anal rectal disorders. As I wrap up this episode, let's see if we've completed our goals for this lesson. First, can you describe the main differences between internal and external hemorrhoids? Hemorrhoids are caused by inflammation of the perianal vasculature. Internal hemorrhoids are located above the pectinate line and are painless because their innervation is visceral. External hemorrhoids are located below the pectinate line and are painful because their innervation is somatic. Hemorrhoids can be treated conservatively with a high-fiber diet, increased water intake, and sitz baths. Invasive treatments would include surgical resection. Second, can you describe how patients with anal fissures present and how to treat them? Anal fissures are slit-like tears within the anal mucosa on the posterior border below the pectinate line. Anal fissures commonly present in patients with chronic constipation, with pain during defecation and bright red blood on wiping. New therapies for fissures include Botox injections, which help relax the sphincter to decrease strain on the tear. Next, can you describe the symptoms, cause, and treatment of anal abscesses and fistulas? Anal abscesses are pus-filled pockets resulting from infection by a combination of anaerobic and aerobic or facultative bacteria. Common offending organisms include Clostridium species, Streptococcus species, and E. coli. Symptoms of anal abscess include pain, swelling, tenderness, and fever. Antibiotics are insufficient alone because they cannot penetrate the interior of the abscess. Abscesses must also be incised and drained. On the other hand, anal fistulas are caused by extension of an abscess towards the skin margin. The same bacterial etiologies found in anal abscesses are implicated in fistulas too. Fistulotomy has a success rate of 95%. However, there is significant incontinence risk. Finally, can you describe proctitis and anal pruritus? Proctitis is inflammation of the rectal lining that presents with painful defecation, bleeding, and urgency. Anal itching is most frequently idiopathic, but can be caused by parasites or fungi. Candida and Tinea are common fungal etiologies of perianal itching. Both are treated with antifungals. Pinworm causes intense anal itching and is diagnosed with an anal tape test. Transmission is fecal-oral, and treatment is with benzimidazole. And that's all I have for today. Armed with your newfound knowledge, let's revisit our patient from the beginning of this episode. You are seeing a 32-year-old woman who is 6 weeks postpartum after an uncomplicated pregnancy and vaginal delivery. While her newborn is doing well, she's concerned about experiencing rectal bleeding and pain with bowel movements. She also reports feeling a rubbery, painful lump when she wipes. On exams, she has a small rubbery protrusion from the anal canal as well as perianal excoriation. What additional questions would you ask her to help diagnose her condition? What would you recommend as management for this condition? First, you ask your patient if she has experienced any fevers or swelling and tenderness in the perineum. This is because you want to rule out an anal abscess. She reports having no fevers or perianal swelling. Because she presents with a small rubbery protrusion, it is unlikely that she has an anal fissure. Your patient's history and physical exam lead you to the diagnosis of external hemorrhoids, and there is no need for further diagnostic testing. Your patient exclaims, "Hemorrhoids? I thought only older people got hemorrhoids. I know my mother has them, and they weren't painful." You explain that hemorrhoids are more common as people age, but pregnancy is also a risk factor. Likely the hemorrhoids that her mother has are internal hemorrhoids, which are located where there are no pain fibers. On the contrary, hers are external hemorrhoids, which are innervated by pain fibers. You recommend a high-fiber diet, increased water intake, and some stool softeners. You also say that sitz baths may help the symptoms. You ask your patient to follow up in 1 month if her symptoms do not improve. After she leaves your clinic, you appreciate how important taking a thorough history and physical exam is for diagnosing and distinguishing the different types of anal rectal disorders. And that's our show for today. Make sure to like and subscribe. Your feedback continuously helps us to improve. You can get the full RX Bricks experience online at www.usmle-rx.com, complete with illustrations, study questions, flashcards, and active learning. Happy studying now, and until next time.